WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A major health insurer in Virginia says it's pulling out of the subsidized market created by the Affordable Care Act. UVA's President Sullivan assesses the university's response to the violent rallies of August, and a look at the prospects for farming hemp in Virginia. One JMU professor is working on that. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, September 8th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College. When you earn a two-year associate degree, transferring to a four-year college is possible through their guaranteed transfer agreement programs. More information at brcc.edu.
At yesterday's Faculty Senate meeting at the University of Virginia, President Teresa Sullivan presented the actions the university has taken since the events of August 11th and 12th. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini reports.
These included a review of the application of its safety alert protocols, the hiring of a higher education safety and security consulting firm, and increased police coverage across grounds. Faculty Senator Sylvia Chung expressed her concern that more policing would not translate into more security, but into more policing of only a certain segment of the population. Risa Golubov, in charge of a dean's working group, added that they were looking at having a longer-term institutional response through the teaching and research done at UVA. They identified three main areas: social justice and civil rights, the relationship between free speech and community, and that of free speech with the more recent right to bear arms. Indeed, the first Supreme Court case to decide whether the Second Amendment protects an individual right to bear arms was only in 2008. After an hour of Q&A, Teresa Sullivan concluded by acknowledging the main mistake that was made that weekend.
We thought what we were having was a routine protest march. Understand, we have about 30 protest marches a year at the university. But we were wrong about the playbook. This wasn't about free speech. This was about weaponizing free speech and turning it into something else. And the playbook we really need is more like a playbook for domestic terrorism. I think it's clear we weren't ready for that.
For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
This week, yet another insurer pulled out of the marketplace for subsidized health insurance created by the Affordable Care Act. As Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports, this announcement has more drastic consequences than the previous ones.
Last month, it looked like Virginia's marketplace of health insurance providers for low-income people would actually be expanding, providing more choices to people across the state. But then the largest provider, Anthem, decided to pull out. Jill Hankin at Virginia Poverty Law Center says that set into motion a chain reaction that had Optima reversing a decision it made only a few weeks ago to expand into all those parts of rural Virginia, areas that were served by Anthem.
When Optima made its decision to expand to more localities of Virginia, it was at the time that Anthem was also serving that population. But when Anthem pulled out, it left Optima holding the bag, and the bag was an enormous bag.
A bag full of sick patients to insure. Now, in most businesses, setting up a monopoly would be a good thing. But Sabrina Corlett at Georgetown University says health insurance doesn't work that way.
We just nationally celebrated a couple of weeks ago the news that the last county in the country that was without an insurer, that was in Ohio, was filled just last month. So hearing about this news in Virginia, it sounds like a real setback.
A setback especially for the 62,000 people with marketplace insurance who live in one of the 63 localities in Virginia that now have no option for health insurance. Open enrollment for the places where insurers haven't bailed yet starts in November. I'm Michael Pope.
Two inmates' deaths and amputation of another's leg have led to arguments in federal court against a Virginia prison that settled complaints last year regarding health care. The Washington Post reports a Wednesday filing says Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women, or FCCW, should be held in contempt for failing promises made over substandard care. Plaintiffs allege pain complaints by 70-year-old Carolyn Liberto and 38-year-old Deanna Neese were ignored before both died at Fluvanna in July. Former inmate and amputee 63-year-old Sherry Richburg said in an affidavit, Fluvanna punished her a second time when medical staff did not care for her. Senior Assistant State Attorney General Richard Voorhis said in an April court document, FCCW and its medical contractor made tremendous progress implementing the settlement's terms. The Virginia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce on Thursday called on Congress to urgently address the protection of Dreamers since Trump announced he is ending DACA. Charles Fishburne with our partner station WCVE reports.
Michelle Jager is president and CEO of the Virginia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
It's over 15,000 Dreamers in Virginia, and right now they're in a state of limbo. They have no path to getting an education, working, getting a driver's license.
He says the Trump administration's decision to cancel the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program has left them with no options through no fault of their own, and Congress needs to set aside politics and find a viable solution.
They're paying taxes, they're in the workforce, they're in the universities.
Latinos in Virginia have increased 92% since the year 2000. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
Fans of the Rocky Horror Picture Show can see a revival of the original stage show in Stanton this weekend, WMRA's Calvin Pinn reports.
Fans of the Rocky Horror Picture Show are generally more familiar with the 1975 cult film than the original play that inspired it. That's the challenge the Shenandoah Arts Council faced with their own production of the Rocky Horror Show. To please the fans who have experienced the midnight screenings and stay faithful to the original production, they decided to marry elements of the film and stage. Jackie Pattison directed the musical, which will debut tonight in Stanton.
We're incorporating the film culture, what was the result of that film. Because as we know, that film was probably not the best film ever created, so the reason why people started making up lines and screaming them at the screen.
That tradition is almost as old as the film itself. The production team saw this as an opportunity to eliminate the fourth wall and incorporate the audience into the show. Prop bags filled with items to throw will be provided per tradition, along with the often risque callbacks. Hardcore Rocky Horror fans know them by heart, but for those who are less familiar, the lines will be projected on a screen above the stage.
Didn't we pass a castle back a few miles down the road? Maybe they have a telephone I might use.
I'm coming with you!
The Rocky Horror Show will be showing at the Shinan Arts Intellos Theater at Gypsy Hill Place this weekend through Sunday, September 17th. Tickets and more information can be found at shinanarts.org. For WMRA News, I'm Calvin Penn.
Finally, growing and processing hemp is against the law in the United States, but 6th District Representative Bob Goodlatte wants to see industrial hemp become a legal crop for farmers, and a JMU professor is developing that potential option. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz reports.
After a while, you almost begin to wonder what industrial hemp can't be used for.
Rope, insulation,
automobile parts,
chipboard, particle board, animal bedding, hempcrete,
clothing,
creams, hand lotions, body lotions.
It can replace fish oil in your diet.
Nutraceuticals, biodiesel, pharmaceuticals, just about anything you can make out of plastic. Canvas sails, composite construction materials, flooring, ceiling, acoustic tiles, human food. Literally tens of thousands of uses for hemp.
But
it's not something that you can, you know, cut off the plant and then light it up and smoke it.
Representative Bob Goodlatte is one of 16 co-sponsors of a bill called the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2017, introduced this summer to, quote, amend the Controlled Substances Act to exclude industrial hemp from the definition of marijuana and for other purposes. The bill has been referred to the Committee on Energy and Commerce and the Committee on the Judiciary, which Goodlatte chairs.
Consumers right now buy hundreds of millions of dollars worth of hemp products every year. But unfortunately, all of the hemp and the production of the product has to take place outside the United States. We want to change that with this law.
Because growing and processing hemp has been illegal for many years, there's a lot of catching up to do. Permitted research. On a Rockingham County farm, tucked deep inside a cornfield where a harvester and trucks were recently at work, is a 10-acre plot of hemp. One of 7 plots totaling between 40 and 50 acres that James Madison University biology professor Mike Renfro is using in his research.
What we really need is to find what cultivars are well suited to Virginia and then breed and start improvement programs among those cultivars and really produce Virginia-specific cultivars that are going to work best for our farmers here.
His partner in research here is farmer Glenn Rhodes.
This crop is 70 years or more behind other crops in research. So when you even look at yields on our crops, those are probably 1930 yields.
Hemp does have a history here in the valley. It was one of the crops that the first British colonies were required to grow for the crown.
Hemp is really what kept the British Navy afloat, because they would use the fibers for making the canvas sails and also making the rope for the rigging. This part of Virginia, right here in the Shenandoah Valley, in the late 1600s, early 1700s, was the nation's largest hemp-producing region.
But by the 1970s, the hemp market had been shut down. Hemp is related to marijuana, just like Brussels sprouts is related to broccoli. They are different cultivars of the same species, Renfro said. The 1970 Controlled Substances Act outlaws the whole cannabis sativa species under Schedule 1, even though hemp plants are very different than marijuana. Hemp plants are tall and slender and must have THC levels below 0.3%, whereas marijuana growers want lots of leaf and flower material and much, much higher THC levels. Renfro says any concerns that marijuana growers might hide their crops in hemp fields or smuggle marijuana in hemp shipments are unfounded fears.
Between the difference in visibility and the bad breeding effects that would come along with it, I don't think that's a big concern.
Out at the hemp field, Rhodes picks a stalk to show its different parts.
I'm sure this doesn't translate well to radio, but this fiber is extremely tough. I mean, I just can't tear that. Now, you can get it down small enough where you can tear it, but it is extremely tough. This is a hemp heart. It's the inner part of the seed. That is a very nutritious product. You can buy it commercially now. It's just amazing that we can't grow it and sell it here.
Renfro says that hemp could be a replacement crop for former tobacco farmers, because farmers can get good yields off of even smaller farms, yields that Rhodes thinks could eventually be a really good cash crop. He says farmers are excited to join the market.
You hear all the jokes about, are you growing marijuana and all that, and then you get the farmer that walks up and says, when can I start growing it?
The work of bringing together farmers and processors to establish manufacturing streams for a crop that's still illegal isn't finished yet. But Representative Goodlatte is optimistic about the prospects of removing the legal barrier to making hemp a domestically produced commodity.
I think it's going to have very broad bipartisan support. It should pass the House easily. The United States Senate's another question, but again, I think it'll have bipartisan support there. Commercial production hopefully will occur in the near future, but you never know how long the legislative process is going to take.
For WMRA News, I'm Christopher Clymer-Kurtz.
You can learn more about hemp and the proposed legislation in Congress at WMRA.org. And one note, we tried to ask Goodlatte for comment on other issues besides hemp, but his press secretary said he was out of time. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Enjoy your Friday. Thanks for joining me.